Well, here we go. It's the big thing on the news, according to me. Yeah, he's actually doing it, folks. He's actually stepped up to the podium. He's starting his press conference. A little bit late. A little bit late, but he's doing it. Of course, he's giving a report on where we stand 65 days in. I think he's got his math wrong, but that's okay. I think we're only, anyway.
I also set a goal before I took office of getting a majority of schools in K through 8.
He's doing all this, not the governors, not the states. The whole program wasn't already in place. Where the day he was inaugurated, actually the day before he was inaugurated, there's 1.4 million people vaccinated. It's now increased to almost 2 million a day. He's taking all the credit for getting 100 people vaccinated. And unfortunately, now people are running up against a wall of basically people who don't want to be vaccinated. They've vaccinated basically everybody who wants to be vaccinated. They actually have more vaccinations now available than people who want them. This is a problem for them because it's going to drop off extremely fast. Instant relief. After a year of doing nothing, you get $2,000. $600 and $1,400. New signs of hope.
Since it was passed, a majority of economic forecasters have significantly increased their projections on the economic growth that's going to take place this year. They're now projecting it will exceed 6%, a 6% growth in GDP. And just this morning, we learned the number of people filing for weekly unemployment insurance fell by nearly 100,000 persons. It's the first time in a year the number has fallen below the pre-pandemic high. So there are still too many Americans out of work, too many families hurting, and there's still a lot of work to do. But I can say to you, the American people, help is here and hope is on the way. Now I'll be happy to take your questions.
Help is here. You can keep hoping, though. I think you get that backwards. I think he meant hope is here and help is on the way. I think that's what he meant to say. You can hope for help. If the help is here, you don't need hope anymore. It's a... Oh, goodness gracious. Pretty amazing.
And that is, I got elected to solve problems. And the most urgent problem facing the American people, I stated from the outset, was COVID-19 and the economic dislocation for millions and millions of Americans. And so that's why I put all my focus in the beginning. There are a lot of problems, but all my focus on dealing with those particular problems. And the other problems we're talking about, from immigration to guns and the other things you mentioned, are...
You can't remember what they are.
...problems have been around a long time. And what we're going to be able to do, God willing, is now begin one at a time to focus on those as well. And whether it's immigration or guns or a number of other problems that face the country. But the fundamental problem is getting people some peace of mind so they can go to bed at night and not stare at the ceiling, wonder whether they lost their health insurance, whether they're going to lose a family member, whether they're going to be in a position where they're going to lose their home because they can't pay their mortgage, or the millions of people are going to get thrown out of their homes because of the inability to pay their rent. So
We're going to move on these one at a time, try to do as many simultaneous as we can. But that's the reason why I focused as I have. And here's the deal. I think my Republican colleagues are going to have to determine whether or not we want to work together, or they're decide that the way in which they want to proceed is to decide the country, continue the politics of division. But I'm not going to do that. I'm just
politics of division. In other words, if you go along with us, or you're divided. You're dividing.
Progress on all of them, but that's going to be for the American people to decide. I think, you know, I doubt whether, maybe you did, maybe others did. I thought, many of you thought there was no possibility of my getting the plan I got passed.
Passed.
Pretty big deal. Got passed. Growing the economy. People's lives are changing. So let's see what happens.
Oh, jeez. Oh, my gosh.
Hired to solve problems.
Not
create division.
Jeez. What a bunch of platitudes. Oh, cow.
Okay.
Oh, my word.
Yamiche.
That's so ridiculous.
Thanks so much, Mr. President. You've said over and over again that immigrants shouldn't come to this country right now. This is the time to come. That message is not being received. Instead, the perception of you that got you elected as a moral, decent man is the reason why
he's a moral, decent man. Oh, my word. Let's look at the stuff on Hunter's laptop.
And how are you choosing which families can stay and which can go, given the fact that even though with Title 42, there are some families that are staying? And is there a timeline for when we won't be seeing these overcrowded facilities with run by CPB when it comes to unaccompanied minors?
Well, look, I guess I should be flattered. People are coming because I'm the nice guy. That's the reason why it's happening. That I'm a decent man, or however it's phrased, that, you know, that's why they're coming, because, you know, Biden's a good guy.
Oh, my word.
The matter is, nothing has changed. As many people came, 28% increase in children to the border in my administration, 31% in the last year of, in 2019, before the pandemic, in the Trump administration. It happens every single solitary year. There is a significant increase in the number of people coming to the border in the winter months of January, February, March. It happens every year. In addition to that, there is does anybody suggest that there was a 31% increase under Trump because he was a nice guy and he was doing good things at the border? That's not the reason.
Oh, that's why people are coming here, because the president's a nice guy.
Is that they can travel with the least likelihood of dying on the way because of the heat in the desert, number one. Number two, they're coming because of the circumstances.
Excuse me?
In country. The way to deal with this problem, and I started to deal with it back when I was United States Senator, Vice President, putting together a bipartisan plan of over $700 million to do with the root causes of why people are leaving.
Oh, here we go. We're going to talk about this whole, we're going to send them money so they don't come here.
He didn't use it. He didn't do it. In addition to that, what he did, he dismantled all the elements.
You're not sending money to the people who are having problems. You're sending money to the people who are causing the problems. That whole premise is so absolutely absurd. They're not sending money. When they send that $700 million, it's not going to individuals who are having struggles. It's going to the governments who are causing the struggles. Are we supposed to keep paying them? It's like protection money.
Say one other thing on this. If you take a look at the number of people who are coming, the vast majority, the overwhelming majority of people coming to the border and crossing are being sent back. Thousands, tens of thousands of people who are over 18 years of age and single
people, one at a time coming, have been sent back, sent home. We're sending back the vast majority of the families that are coming. We're trying to work out now with Mexico their willingness to take more of those families back. But that's what's happening. They're not getting across the border. And those who are coming across the border who are unaccompanied children, we're moving...
There are families coming across the border, period. He's saying they're not. They're being turned away. All the families are being turned away. How many are being turned... Well, let's see some numbers. Let's hear some numbers. Because apparently there are about... Oh, I don't know, 12,000 families that were taking in the last 3 months, 2 months.
Fall in the category of the very young. So what we're doing is we're providing for the space again to be able to get these kids out of the Border Patrol facilities, which no child, no one should be in any longer than 72 hours. And today, I went to, for example, I used all the resources available to me. Went to the Defense Department, and the Secretary of Defense has just made available Fort Bliss 5,000 beds.
It's a lot of kids.
Immediately available. 5,000.
A lot of kids under 18 years old.
So we're building back up the capacity that should have been maintained and built upon.
No, it should not have been. No, we were controlling the border. That's why we didn't need the capacity. This is one person so far. One person has asked a question, and he's rambling on.
Follow-up question is...
Oh, we got a follow-up question.
If you could talk a little bit about which families, why they're being allowed to stay, what the families that are being allowed to stay, why they're being allowed to stay. In addition to that, when it comes to the filibuster, which is what Zeke was asking about, there's immigration is a big issue, of course, when it relates to filibuster.
Good question.
Jim Clyburn, someone, of course, who you know very well, has backed the idea of a filibuster rule when it comes to civil rights and voting rights.
Well, look, I'm going to deal with all of those problems. The question is the priorities as they come and land on my plate. Let's go to the first question you asked, the first of the second questions you asked, and that is, what about dealing with families? Why are not some not going back? Because Mexico is refusing to take them back. They're saying they won't take them back, not all of them. We're in negotiations with...
Well, isn't that convenient?
Mexico, I think
Mexico won't take them back.
They should all be going back. All be going back. The only people we're not going to let sitting there...
I want to know how we can fly them around the country to process them into the country, but we can't fly them back to their country. Why don't we just do that?
Majority of people under the age of 18 come to the United States, come with a telephone number on a wristband, or come with a telephone number in their pocket in the United States, a mother, a father, a close relative, a grandmama, or grandpa. But what's happening before is it's taking literally weeks and weeks and maybe even months before anybody pick up the phone and call to see if there really was someone there. Well, we've set up a system now where within 24 hours, there's a phone call made as that person, that child crosses the border. And then a verification system being put in place as of today to determine quickly whether or not that is a trafficker being called or that is actually a mom, a dad, and or a close...
How do they know?
They're establishing that right...
They're doing DNA tests over the phone now, I guess.
Dad says, to take the extreme case, I got a birth certificate. And guess what? We're getting that kid directly to that parent immediately. And so that's going to reduce significantly. There's two ways to reduce child populations in circumstances that are not acceptable, like being held at a Border Patrol station. One is to get them to the place where they have a relative and set a date as to when a hearing can be held. The second way to do it is put them in a health and human services facility that we're occupying now, both licensed beds around the country that exist, as well as, for example, federal resources like Fort Bliss, to get them safely in a place where they can be taken care of while their fate is determined. Filibuster. With regard to the filibuster, I believe we should go back to a position of the filibuster that existed just when I came to the United States Senate 120 years ago. And that is
when he came in the Senate 120 years ago. Oh my gosh, I'm going
to
pass out.
Last year alone, there were five times that many. So it's being abused in a gigantic way. And for example, it used to be you had to stand there and talk until you collapsed. And guess what? People got tired of talking and tired of collapsing. Filibusters broke down and were able to break the filibuster, get a quorum and vote. So I strongly support moving in that direction. In addition to
he didn't say
open mind about dealing with certain things that are just elemental to the functioning of our democracy, like the right to vote, like the basic right to vote.
He's all over the place.
We've amended the filibuster in the past, but here's the deal. As you observed, I'm a fairly practical guy. I want to get things done. I want to get them done consistent with what we promised the American people. And in order to do
that... Yeah, well, they've already broken those promises.
Senate, we've got to get to the place where I get 50 votes so that the Vice President of the United States can break the tie, or I get 51 votes without her. And so I'm going to say something outrageous. I have never been particularly poor at calculating how to get things done in the United States Senate. So the best way to get something done, if it holds near and dear to you, that you like to be able to... Anyway.
We're
going to get a lot done. And if we have to...
He's losing his thoughts. He's done. At 5 minutes into this thing, he's done.
Then we'll have to go beyond what I'm talking about. Okay. Hang on. Sorry.
Oh, he's calling on people. He's got a list of people he's calling on.
To follow up on the filibuster, so do you believe it should take...
Oh, this is ridiculous. This is a farce. He's looking down at his paper to see who he's supposed to call on next. This isn't a press conference. This is a charade.
It's going to be hard to get a parliamentary ruling that allows 50 votes to end the filibuster, the existence of a filibuster.
Whenever you hear him stammering, he's looking down at his notes.
What the parliamentary rules and how to get there.
On how he's reading his script.
Our preoccupation with the filibuster is...
He's literally reading from the script.
But in the meantime, we got a lot we can do while we're talking about what we're going to do about the filibuster.
And he's still losing his place.
Let me get here. Okay.
This whole thing is scripted. Oh, calling on the next person.
I'd like to circle back to immigration, please.
Oh, we're going to circle back now.
He's listed the reasons that people are coming, talking about in-country...
This is the biggest farce I've ever heard of. This is not a press conference. This is not the way they treated... Trump would stand in the podium and they would fire questions at him. Well, that's his problem. Talk about separating people from their parents.
The idea that I'm going to say, which I would never do, that an unaccompanied child ends up at the border, we're
we're just going to let them starve to death and stay on the other side. No previous administration did that either, except Trump.
Oh, hey, yeah, no, he didn't do that.
I'm not going to do it.
Oh, my word.
That's why I've asked the Vice President of the United States yesterday to be the lead person on dealing with focusing on the fundamental reasons why people leave Honduras, Guatemala, and El Salvador in the first place. It's because of earthquakes, floods. It's because of lack of food. It's because of gang violence. It's because of a whole range of things that when I was vice president had the same obligation to deal with unaccompanied children, I was able to get it slowed up significantly by working with the heads of state of those communities to do things like in one of the major cities, the reason people were leaving is they couldn't walk in the street because they were getting, their kids were getting beat up or shot or gang violence. Well, what I was able to do is not give money to the head of state because so many are corrupt, but I was able to say, okay, you need lighting in the streets to change things? I'll put the lighting in. We got a contractor. We got the type of lighting.
We got the contractor to put lighting in because that's why people were leaving their countries, leaving their families to come here because they had poor lighting in the street that was keeping the crime rate up. So we put in lighting. Folks, think about that.
In the first place, because they didn't have housing or water or sustenance, we did nothing. We're going to do a lot in our administration. We're going to be
$7 million a year. That's because we got people living in this country who are, we got veterans living on the street in this country.
That mother did not sit around with on the kitchen table and say, you know, I got a great idea.
Our government is not in charge of feeding people in other countries. That's for the people in this country to send their money directly to mission organizations and that kind of thing to do. It's not, our government was not put in place to be benevolent. I know that sounds cruel, but free us up to be able to do those things ourselves.
I know Joe Biden's a nice guy, and he'll take care of him.
The government is not our church. It just infuriates me. I don't know if you can tell or not.
When President Obama asked me to come and deal, I was in Turkey at the time. He said, you got to come home and take care of this. So we put together a plan, and it had an impact. And so,
what were you doing over there in Turkey there, Joe?
Whether how we go ahead and do this, what we do, there's no easy answer.
Quick follow-up, if I may. Do you want to see these unaccompanied minors staying in this country, or should
yeah, he'd like to sniff their hair.
Eventually?
Well, the judgment has to be made whether or not, in this young man's case, he has a mom at home. There's an overwhelming reason why he'd be putting a plane and flown back to his mom.
Follow, sir. You mentioned circumstances that must be horrific. The Customs and Border Protection Facility in Donna, Texas, I was there, is at 1,556% capacity right now with mostly unaccompanied minors.
1,500% capacity. 15 times the numbers that they're supposed to have in there. Well, I'm not going to answer that question because that's Kamala's thing now. Come on, man.
That's why we're going to be moving 1,000 of those kids out quickly. That's why I got Fort Bliss opened up. That's why I've been working from the moment this started to happen to try to find additional access for children to be able to safely, not just children, but particularly children, to be able to safely be housed while we follow through on the rest of what's happening. That is totally unacceptable. Ken.
Thank you, Mr. President. I wanted to ask you about Afghanistan. You face a May 1st deadline for the withdrawal of U.S. troops from that country. As a candidate in foreign affairs, you wrote that it is past time to end these forever wars. Can you commit to the American people that by May 2nd, the U.S. will no longer have forces in Afghanistan?
The answer is that it's going to be hard to meet the May 1 deadline. Just in terms of tactical reasons, hard to get those troops out. So what we've been doing, what I've been doing, and what Secretary Blinken has been doing, has been, we've been meeting with our allies, those other nations that have NATO allies who have troops in Afghanistan as well. And if we leave, we're going to do so in a safe and orderly way. We're in consultation, I said, with our allies and partners and how to proceed. And Secretary Blinken is meeting in Brussels this week with our NATO allies, particularly those who have forces there. And General Austin is just met with Kayani, and I'm waiting for the briefing on that. He is the leader, quote, in Afghanistan and Kabul. And there's a UN-led process that's beginning shortly on how to mechanically get people, how to end this war. But it is not my intention to stay there for a long time. But the question is, how and in what circumstances do we meet that agreement that was made by President Trump to leave under a deal that looks like it's not being able to be worked out to begin with? How's that done? But we are not staying a long time.
Do you think it's possible that
we will leave? The question is when we leave.
Do you believe, though, it's possible we could have troops there next year?
I can't picture that being the case. Okay, Kristen.
Thank you very much, Mr. President. Given the conditions that were just laid out at the migrant facilities at the U.S. border, will you commit to allowing journalists to have access to the facilities that are overcrowded moving forward?
I will commit when my plan very shortly is underway to let you have access to not just them, but other facilities as well.
Be able to have access to the facilities. We've obviously been allowed to be inside one, but we haven't seen the facilities in which children are packed together to really give the American people a chance to see that. Will you commit to transparency on this issue?
I will commit to transparency. And as soon as I am in a position to be able to implement what we're doing right now, one of the reasons I haven't gone down, my chief folks have gone down, is I don't want to become the issue. I don't want to be, you know, bringing all the Secret Service and everybody with me to get in the way. So this is being set up. And you'll have full access to everything once we get this thing moving.
And just to be clear, how soon will that be, Mr. President?
I don't know, to be clear.
He is large and in charge. I don't know.
You decided to roll back some of those policies. Did you move too quickly
to roll back what? I'm sorry?
Policies. Did you move too quickly to roll back some of the executive orders of your predecessor?
First of all the policies that are underway were not helping at all. Did not slow up the amount of immigration. As many people coming.
Well, what? We have record numbers of people. The previous policy didn't help.
Rolling back the policies of remain in Mexico, sitting on the edge of the Rio Grande in a muddy circumstance with not enough to eat. I make no apologies for that. I make no apologies for ending programs that did not exist before Trump became president, that have an incredibly negative impact on the law, international law, as well as on human dignity. And so I make no apologies for that.
I have to ask you about foreign policy, Mr. President. Overnight, we learned that North Korea tested 2 ballistic missiles. What, if any, actions will you take, and what is your red line on North Korea?
Let me say that, number one, UN Resolution 1718 was violated by those particular missiles that were tested. Number one. We're consulting with our allies and partners, And there will be responses if they choose to escalate.
They've already escalated, buddy. They're starting to test.
But I'm also prepared for some form of diplomacy. But it has to be conditioned upon the end result of denuclearization. So that's what we're doing right now, consulting with our allies.
Just very quick
follow-up. You only got another hour now, okay?
Diplomacy, can you define what you mean? And former President Obama warned the incoming President Trump that North Korea was the top foreign policy issue that he was watching. Is that how you assess the crisis in North Korea?
Yes.
Yeah, that's why Trump was actually walking in the demilitarized zone. First president to ever enter North Korea. They stopped testing missiles. And now all of a sudden we've got the situation back. There's an agenda with North Korea. I don't know what it is. The powers that be, the bureaucrats apparently have some kind of issue going on there. It probably has to do with, you know, funding the military complex.
It's sick. Deciding in some states that you cannot bring water to people standing in line waiting to vote. Deciding that you're going to end voting at 5 o'clock when working people are just getting off work. Deciding that there will be no absentee
ballots. Oh my gosh. What is he talking about? It's the federal government taking over the voting process.
Find this despicable. Republican voters, folks outside this White House. I'm not talking about the elected officials. I'm talking about voters. And so I'm convinced that we'll be able to stop this because it is the most pernicious thing. This makes Jim Crow
pernicious.
Look like Jim Eagle.
Oh, yeah.
What they're trying to do.
Crow. Yeah. Jim Crow, Democrat, by the way.
Friends in the House and the Senate to keep that from becoming the law.
Is there anything else you can do about it besides passing legislation?
The answer is yes, but I'm not going to lay out a strategy in front of the whole world and you now.
And then on a related note, have you decided whether you are going to run for re-election in 2024? You haven't set up a re-election campaign yet, as your predecessor had by this time.
My predecessor needed to.
He got 81 million votes. Why should he have to worry about it?
The answer is yes. My plan is to run for re-election. That's my expectation.
Oh, yeah, right. 4 years. Joe Biden in 4 years. Can you imagine? Can you imagine? Oh, my gosh. Oh, my word. That was a flat-out lie. That's just a flat-out lie.
The same way he does. Have you rejected bipartisanship?
No, I haven't at all. But maybe when's the last time a president invited the opposite party down at least a half a dozen times to talk about issues, everything from how we work. We're working with a group of 20 members of the Senate right now in the House on how we reestablish our ability to make computer chips and how we get ahead of the game. How we can work together. We're working together on a bunch of things. But look, I know Mitch well. Mitch knows me well. I would expect Mitch to say exactly what he said. But this is a matter of making sure that I would like elected Republican support. But what I know I have now is I have electoral support from Republican voters. Republican voters agree with what I'm doing. And so, unless Mitch says the last thing I did, this last piece of legislation is so far left, well, then you ought to take a look at his party. Over 50% of them must be over that edge as well, because they support what I did.
I have bumper music coming. Okay. I'm going to.
Where am I here? Let me see.
Going to eliminate it. We're going to get rid of that.
Caitlin?
Thank you very much, Mr. President. I have a question for you, but first, I'd like to follow up on a question from Yamiche, and that's on the filibuster.
That counts as a question, but go ahead.
Okay, I'll make it quick. It's a quick question. Regarding the filibuster, at John Lewis's funeral, President Barack Obama said he believed the filibuster was a relic of the Jim Crow era. Do you agree?
Yes.
If not, why not abolish it if it's a relic of the Jim Crow era?
Successful electoral politics is the art of the possible.
Oh, my word. Oh, my gosh.
Figure out how we can get this done and move in the direction of significantly changing.
He's panting. There's something going on with him. He's not doing well here.
From the time it came into being by an extreme way in the last 20 years. Let's deal with the abuse first.
You're moving closer to eliminating the filibuster. Is that correct?
I answered your question.
You also just made some news by saying that you are going to run for re-election.
I said that is my expectation.
So is that a yes, that you are running for re-election?
Look, I don't know where you guys come from, man. I've never been able to travel. I'm a great respecter of fate. I've never been able to plan 4.5, 3.5 years ahead for certain.
And if you do run, will Vice President Harris be on your ticket?
I would fully expect that to be the case. She's doing a great job. She's a great partner.
Jeez, oh, my gosh.
Do you believe you'll be running against former President Trump?
Oh, come on. I don't even think about it. I have no idea. I have no idea whether it'll be a Republican Party. Do you? I know you don't have to answer my question, but I mean, you know, do you? I mean, look, this is the way I view things. I've become a great respecter of fate in my life. I set a goal of this that's in front of me to get things done for the people I care most about, which are hard-working, decent American people who get really having it stuck to them. I want to change the paradigm. I want to change the paradigm. We start to reward work, not just wealth. I want to change the paradigm. If you notice, didn't you find it kind of interesting?
I think he wants to change the paradigm. Not positive.
Worried about that the cost and the taxes that if there is any tax to be had, as they talk about it, in dealing with the act that we just passed, which puts money in people's pockets, ordinary people. Do you hear them complain when they passed close to $2 trillion Trump tax cut, 83% going to the top 1%? Do you hear them talk about that at all? I love the fact that they found this whole idea of concern about the federal budget. It's kind of amazing. When the federal budget is saving people's lives, they don't think it's such a good idea. When the federal budget is failing,
what is he talking about?
The wealthiest Americans, 90 of the Fortune 500 companies making billions of dollars, not paying a cent in taxes, reducing taxes to the point that people who are making, you know, if you're a husband and wife, school teacher, and a cop, you're paying at a higher rate than the average person making $1 billion a year is. Something's wrong.
No, that's not. That is such a lie. That is such a lie.
I'm concerned. Look, I meant what I said when I ran.
They have perpetrated this on the American people, and it's they've been successful in doing it because no one has called them out on it. That is not the case. It's like what's his name? Buffett or whatever his name is. Not Jimmy Buffett.
To rebuild the backbone of this country.
Mr. Buffett. Warren Buffett. Saying that his secretary pays more in taxes than he does.
Build them. The third reason I said I was running.
Baloney.
Was to unite the country. And generically speaking, all of you said, no, you can't do that. Well, I've not been able to unite the Congress, but I've been uniting the country based on the polling data.
He's uniting the country. Joe Biden is uniting the country. That's just in, folks. Joe Biden. Joe Biden is uniting.
It's about just, you know, getting out there, putting one foot in front of the other, and just trying to make things better for people.
Yeah, just putting one foot in front of the other. As he goes up the airplane stairs.
How to put food on the table for their kids, to be able able to have, make sure that they go to bed not staring to the ceiling like my dad did, whatever, they, since he didn't have health insurance, what happens if mom gets sick or he got sick? These are basic things.
It's a very different time when he was a kid. You'd go to the doctor and just pay him, you pay him cash.
That the vast majority of people,
that's how that used to work.
Including registered Republicans by and large, share that same view, that same sense of...
At his age, I'm trying to remember, back 70, in the 1950s, I think there were only approximately about 40% of the American public was covered by health insurance. If that, I was probably less than that, actually.
About your relationship with China, now that you've been on in office for a couple months, there's obviously the meeting in Alaska that was a little theatrical, and there's the continued human rights abuses. So today, I'm wondering, are you more likely than you were when you came into office to maintain tariffs on China? Are you considering banning imports of forced labor products? And would you consider cutting off U.S. investment or Chinese access to international payment systems?
Look, there are each specifically legitimate questions, but they only touch a smidgen of what the relationship with China really is about. I've known Xi Jinping for a long time. Allegedly, by the time I left office as vice president, I had spent more time with Xi Jinping than any world leader had. Because President Obama...
That's not a good sign.
...and the Chinese president Hu decided we should get to know one another, since it was inappropriate for the president of the United States to spend time with the vice president of another country. But it was obvious he was going to become the new leader of China. So I spent hours upon hours with him alone with an interpreter, my interpreter and his.
Let's see the transcripts on that one.
It's very, very straightforward.
Since when have we heard that in the news? This is news to me right now. I didn't realize that Joe spent so much time with Z before he became the leader there.
Is the wave of the future. Democracy can't function in an ever complex world. So, when I was elected and he called to congratulate me, I think to the surprise of the China experts who were his people on the call as well as mine listening, we had a two-hour conversation for 2 hours. And we made several things clear to him.
I'd like to see the transcripts on that.
I made it clear to him again, what I've told him in person on several occasions, that we're not looking for confrontation, although we know there will be steep competition. Two, that we'll have strong competition, but we'll insist that China play by the international rules. Fair competition, fair practices, fair trade. Thirdly, in order to compete effectively, I indicated that we're going to deal with China effectively. And we're going to need three things to do that. I tell our people. First, we're going to invest in American workers and American science. I said that all through the campaign. I say it again, and I'm setting up my administration to be able to do that, which is that, you know, back in the 60s, we used to invest a little over 2% of our entire GDP in pure research and investment in science. Today, it's 0.7%. I'm going to change that. We're going to change that. The future lies in who can, in fact, own the future as it relates to technology, quantum computing, a whole range of things, including in the medical fields. And so what I'm going to do is make sure we invest closer to 2%. One of the reasons why I've set up the PAB, the President's Board with Scientists and the like, again, is we're going to invest in medical research, cancer, Alzheimer's, diabetes, the things, industries of the future, artificial intelligence, quantum computing, biotech, and we're going to make real investments. China is out investing us by a long shot because their plan is to own that future.
It's such a farce. This whole thing is such a farce.
Our alliances, and I've been very clear with them. It's not the anti-Chinese. And we've talked about it.
I want to make sure that, for example, later today after this, as a matter of fact, shortly after this, which is fine, we've been going close to an hour, I'm happy to go longer, but one of the things that I'm going to be doing, I'm going to be speaking with 27 heads of state in Europe. And very shortly, I think within the next hour or so, I don't know the exact time. And earlier this month, and apparently it got the Chinese attention, that's not why I did it, I met with our allies and how we're going to hold China accountable in the region. Australia, India, Japan, and the United States, the so-called Quad. Because we have to have democracies working together. Before too long, I'm going to invite an alliance of democracies to come here to discuss the future. And so,
that sounds scary.
We're going to make it clear that in order to deal with these things, we are going to hold China accountable to follow the rules.
Oh, yeah, right.
Follow the rules, whether it relates to the South China Sea or the North China Sea or the agreement made on Taiwan or a whole range of other things. And the third thing, and the thing that I admire about dealing with Xi is he understands, he makes no pretense about not understanding what I'm saying anymore into him. I pointed out to him, no leader can be sustained in his position or her position unless they represent the values of the country. And I said, Mr. President,
the CCP tells the people what the values of the country are.
Americans value the notion of freedom. America values human rights. We don't always live up to our expectations, but it's a value system. We are founded on that principle. And as long as you and your country continues to so blatantly violate human rights, we are going to continue in an unrelenting way to call to the attention of the world and make it clear what's happening. And he understood that. I made it clear that no American president, at least one did, but no American president ever backed down from speaking out of what's happening to the Uyghurs.
Well, one did. I'm sure that was President Trump.
That's who we are.
No other president has ever done anything wrong except for President Trump.
Walks away from that, as the last one did.
Yeah.
Is the moment we began to lose our
legitimacy. President Trump put more pressure on China than any other president in our history.
I see stiff competition with China.
Hence the bird flu. The China Kung Fu.
But they have an overall goal to become the leading country in the world, the wealthiest country in the world, and the most powerful country in the world. That's not going to happen on my watch, because the United States is going to continue to grow and expand.
Sure it is. Yeah, sure it is.
Joey.
Joe's starting to fade. He's, I wish you could see what I'm seeing here, but what I'm seeing in his eyes, and especially his voice, the next 5 minutes are going to be very telling here with Joe.
Look, I predict to you, your children or grandchildren are going to be doing their doctoral thesis on issue of who succeeded, autocracy or democracy? Because that is what is at stake, not just with China.
Democracy is not a
we're in the midst of a fourth
what we're striving
revolution.
For. They keep mentioning this, and it truly is not. Maybe you've heard this. We do have a constitutional republic, representative republic, and it is different than a democracy. We use a democratic process to elect our representatives. This undermines the entire idea of personal liberty and the protection of our God-given rights established 200 years ago.
It is clear, absolutely clear, and most of the scholars I dealt with at Penn agree with me around the country.
Oh, yeah, most of them do, yeah, because he's asked them all.
The utility of democracies in the 21st century and autocracies. If you notice, you don't have Russia talking about communism anymore. It's about an autocracy. Demand decisions made by a leader of a country. That's what's at stake here. We got to prove democracy works.
Mr. President, sorry. I know you haven't had a chance to address the tragedies in Georgia and Colorado said to stay tuned for actions that you might take on gun control. Wondering if you've made a decision either about sending the manufacturer liability bill that you promised on day one to Capitol Hill, or executive actions like going after ghost guns or giving money to cities and states to battle gun control.
All the above. It's a matter of timing. As you've all observed, successful presidents better than me have been successful in large part because they know how to time what they're doing, order it, decide the priorities, what needs to be done. The next major initiative is, and I'll be announcing it Friday in Pittsburgh in detail, is to rebuild the infrastructure, both physical and technological infrastructure of this country, so that we can compete and create significant numbers of really good paying jobs. Really good paying jobs. And some of you have been around long enough to know that used to be a great Republican goal or initiative. I still think the majority of the American people don't like the fact that we are now ranked, what, 85th in the world in infrastructure? I mean, look, the future rests on whether or not we have the best airports that can accommodate air travel, ports that you can get in and out of quickly, so businesses decide. Some of you, when you're, if you're ever local reporters, and you find your governor or mayor trying to attract business to your community, what's the first thing the business asks? What's the closest access to an interstate highway? How far am I from freight rail? Is the water available? Is enough water available for me to conduct my business? All the things that relate to infrastructure. We have somewhere, I asked the staff to write it down for me, and they did, not for this, but for a longer discussion. We have somewhere in terms of infrastructure, we rank 13th globally in infrastructure. China is investing three times more in infrastructure than the United States is.
Their country is about four times larger than ours.
Of our bridges, 231,000 of them need repairs. Some are physical.
Well, here we go again. Why weren't they repaired 4 years ago when we had another infrastructure thing? Or 4 years before that when we had another infrastructure thing? Or 4 years before that when we had an infrastructure thing? They always have all these statistics, and none of this stuff ever gets done. You know, shovel-ready. I guess there wasn't as many shovel-ready projects as we thought. Yeah, shovel-ready. I guess there wasn't enough. Oh, we had billions of dollars for shovel-ready projects, and I guess there weren't any out there. They weren't shovel-ready. And a lot of this stuff, we talk about water lines and power grid and all those kinds of things. Those are private companies. We don't have a public power system in most states.
Pipe fitters and miners are asked to work capping those wells at the same price that they would charge to dig those wells.
The federal government has very little to do with most of the things that they are going to do. It's just
frustrating. Talk about. Last point I'll make in the infrastructure.
Yeah, and then the money that's going into this bill it's not going to where they say it's going.
Let's think about it. It's the place where we will be able to significantly increase American productivity. At the same time, providing really good jobs for people. But we can't build back to what they used to be.
We have to build back better.
The environment's already, global warming's already done significant damage.
Oh, yeah, it's done significant damage. Yeah.
The roads that used to be above the water level didn't have to worry about where the drainage ditch was. Now you got to rebuild them 3 feet higher because it's not going to go back to what it was before. Only get worse unless we stop it. There's so much we can do. Look at all the stars.
We have to stop it. What are you going to do to stop it? We're going to tax you. Oh, yeah, that'll stop it.
I don't know where you're all from. How many schools where the kids can't drink the water out of the fountain? How many schools are still in a position where there's asbestos? How many schools in America we're sending our kids to don't have adequate ventilation? How many homes, buildings?
It's for the children. It's the children.
Are wasting billions of barrels of oil over time because they can't hold in the heat or the air conditioning. Because this leaks through the windows that are so porous and the connections. It's amazing.
It's so amazing.
So much
it's amazing.
You can do that's good stuff makes people healthier and creates good jobs. And I think that I got one more question here.
One more.
Janet from Univision.
Thank you, Mr. President. We too have been reporting at the border, and just like Cecilia, we're running to.
Yeah, these questions were submitted earlier. He's been practicing these. No question about it.
For their mother who lives in the U.S., we have contacted the mother. That's the only way they know her kids.
Univision, Telemundo.
Today, Thursday, has not contacted that mother. So when can we expect your promise of things getting better?
I don't know.
Well,
I can't.
Getting better, but
they're getting better already.
Real, they're getting a whole hell of a lot better real quick, or we're going to hear some people leaving. Okay? We can get this done. We're going to get it done. I had a long meeting with the entire team and several cabinet level officers the other night. We're going to be moving within the next week over 100,000, I mean, 1,000 people out of. The Border Patrol into safe.
That's a drop in the bucket, folks. A thousand people?
We're going to significantly
a thousand people.
Ramp up. We're already out there contacting.
We have about 3,000 a day coming across the border.
Some of the employees at HHS, there's a lot of them.
More than that, actually. Closer to 4,000 a day. And they say that's ramping up. They say it's getting worse. His numbers are a drop in the bucket. They're not ready for this. The beds at the facility for 5,000 beds, that's not enough. That's 2 days. 2 days worth of stuff.
The next thing that
people.
Has to happen, though, as you well know, has to happen. There has to be some certitude that this is actually mom, dad, or whomever. And there's ways to.
I wonder how many children have died down there. You know, every time a child would die in custody, it was Trump's fault. Trump's killing them. Trump's killing everybody. There's blood on his hands. I'm being facetious, but not really. No joke, but it is. But I'm not. I'm so tired of this guy already. I really am. This guy, this is pathetic.
Quickly, as humanly possible, and as safely as possible.
Well, no, treating the root causes in Latin America doesn't change things overnight. How do you realistically and physically keep these families from coming to the U.S. when things will not get better in their countries right away?
Well, I can't guarantee that, but I know. You know,
he walked away from the microphone for some reason.
The journey of 1,000 miles starts with the first step. You know as well as I do. You cover it. You have serious. It's not like somebody sitting in a hand-hewn table in Guatemala. I mean, in somewhere in Mexico or in Guadalupe, saying, "I got a great idea. Let's sell everything we have."
This is. He said this. He's already said this before. These are all the same things he's been saying. Same answers he's been giving and same things he's been saying in speeches for a long time. They actually do that. What he's saying doesn't happen actually does happen.
When my great-grandfather got in a coffin ship in the Irish Sea, the expectation was he going to live long enough on that ship to get to the United States of America. But they left because of what the Brits had been doing. They were in real, real trouble. They didn't want to leave. But they had no choice. So you got,
Oh, he's blaming the British?
But I can guarantee
what did he just say?
Better. We can make it better. We can change the lives of so many.
His family came to the U.S. because of the Brits?
And I hope you point out, I realize it's much more heart-wrenching, and it is, to deal with a 5 and 6 and 7 year old. But you went down there and you saw the vast majority of these children. 70% are 16 years old, 17 years old, and mostly males. Doesn't make it It doesn't make it good, bad, or different. But the idea that we have tens of thousands of kids in these god-awful facilities that are really little babies crying all night, there's some. That's true. That's why we got to act. And yesterday, I asked my team, both the director of the two agencies as well as others, I asked them, what would they, in fact, and I asked their opinion because they're the experts, but I said, focus on the most vulnerable immediately. But there's no reason why in the next month, as people cross the border, that phone call can't be made in the first 48 hours. And begin.
If I may ask one last question, have you had any talks with Senate Republicans who are threatening this administration with not considering the immigration legislation that was passed in the House until the situation at the border has been resolved?
No, because I know they have to posture for a while. They sort of got to get out of their system. But I'm ready to work with any Republican who wants to help solve the problem or make the situation better. But folks, I'm going. Thank you very, very much. I appreciate it. Thank you.
And there you have it, folks. That's the quote news conference that we now have from somebody by the name of Biden, I guess. I don't know. Some guy named Biden. And they're done. And it's just, he just walks off. He didn't take any off-the-cuff questions. He didn't call on anyone other than what he had on his list there. So there you have it. I'm going to go ahead and shut that down because there's no use listening to that. It amazes me. It really does amaze me that people can get away with this crap. We are seeing such a phony administration right now. You know, the contrast. The frustrating thing with Trump was that he had the right idea. You know, he went after them, didn't back down, got back in their face and took their questions and fielded them very well, in my opinion. However, his ability to communicate and actually articulate his answers was left a lot to be desired, in my opinion. Just his ability to just break it down and say it the way it needed to be said. That's where I think DeSantis, Governor DeSantis, really has the... an incredible ability, really, to do what he does in terms of fielding questions from. I mean, DeSantis did a better job yesterday at a press conference than this guy did. DeSantis just goes out to the podium, the press is there, they start firing questions at him, and he gives them answers. Explanations and answers, because he's in charge of the state of Florida, the government there. He's governing. We're not seeing that from this guy at all. I would pit just about any one of the governors in any state right now, Democrat or Republican, doing a better job. Whitmer does a better job running her state than this guy's doing running the presidency, the executive branch. And, you know, granted, I don't agree with Whitmer, but she's at least knows what's going on in her state. And speaking of governors, let's talk about Kristi Noem for a moment. She is taking a lot of flack from people on the right now. There are people just giving up on her completely over this whole thing with women's sports, because she vetoed the bill protecting women's sports. I think it's a little premature at this point. Now, I did not look at the bill, and I haven't looked at the response. She vetoed it based on a response where she wants it correct, some things corrected. I have not read any of that, and all I know is what I've heard her say publicly, as well as I saw the interview with Tucker. I thought her other explanation was better. I saw just an interview. Actually, it wasn't even an interview. It was more of a speech on it. It wasn't really an interview. It's kind of a press conference speech type thing. that I thought explained things better than what Republicans are giving her credit for. Now, if it turns out that she's lying in this situation, that she's really kind of being deceptive about what her reasons for changing things, because she was initially for this bill, and then she changed it after talking to the NCAA and a couple other groups, I think, in order. If that's the case, then she's done, as far as the GOP is concerned, at least in for the near future, because, like, you know, people's memories are not very long. The Democrats have a memory that's about 2 days, 2 or 3 days long, according to the news cycle. The Republicans have a memory that's about a month long or 2 months long. They'll be on to something different. Something else will happen, and all of a sudden she'll be the hero again, and they'll forget all about this. Until it comes to election time, or if she runs for president, they'll mention it. But she'll have it all figured out by then and have some kind of an explanation, and there'll be many other things that'll be bigger issues by then. So, now, a good combination, I think, would be Kristi Noem and Ron DeSantis. If Trump is going to stay out of it, I would put them up as president, vice president, either way, either one. I think DeSantis, in my opinion, would be my choice for president. Kristi would be a great VP, I think. There's some others out there that I think would probably do well as well, but I don't know. But that's who I would look at this point. And there's some others out there so that's the whole story right now. I think that's probably where we're at, I guess. I don't know if that makes any sense, but. I think we're going to end the show there, and that'll be the show for today. I may still do another show yet this afternoon. I doubt it. We're going to give it a try, maybe. But thanks for listening, and thanks for watching my comments, listening to my comments and all the stuff going on. Once again, God bless. Keep praying for our nation. Have a great day, and we will speak later. Have a great day, everybody. This is the News According to Me, signing off. Good day.